Hi, everybody. It's episode 505 of PodQuest.
Hey.
It is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I am Chris. With me is Druten.
Hello.
And Walnut.
Hi, I'm here.
Are you?
No.
Okay. Just making sure.
No, he's there. He's not here. He's there.
That's true. That is true. How you guys doing?
I'm all right.
I watched the latest episode of Critical Role yesterday, and I'm still sad about it.
Good. Good. Have feeling.
A character sacrificed himself so that everyone else could live in the saddest, most badass way to ever.
I mean, the fact that you were sad about it kind of led to assume that somebody was dead.
Yeah, well, it was a heroic set. I have feelings on it. Do you mind if I go off on this little tangent about these feelings on it real quick?
Well, we're gonna have to cut one of your games then.
It's not long for you.
Okay.
Basically. Spoilers for anyone who watches Critical Role that is not fully caught up. Sam Riegel's character, Fresh Cut Grass, is an automaton, is a robot. And he has a arcane core within him that will explode, that can explode if overcharged. His original making was to be a sabotage bot. Like, once he reaches a certain point of anger, it's supposed to explode and kill everyone in the room or whatever. So they were fighting this really big, one of the biggest BBGEGs that they've ever experienced in a game. And they were getting their ass handed to them. This is their second time encountering this character. And they still, and the first time was like 10 levels prior. And they still were underprepared for this fight. So, because they were getting beat up and everything, and Sam Riegel's character reached his like stress threshold to where he was going to go berserk because he's a homebrew class. He decided the best way to end this is to blow himself up. And so he cast the spell into his arcane core to cause it to blow up while he was standing right next to the enemy. It's great. I don't want to talk bad about the call to make that move. It's a great move. It was an awesome move. It was sad. It was heroic. It was amazing. What I am a little bummed out about is the area of the explosion itself. Roughly maybe 20 to 30 feet tops is how big the radius of the explosion was. So like a 60-foot diameter, sure. But they're in like this small enclosed space in these caverns, and none of the players got hurt from this explosion because they were able to be far enough away. But his original make was to be a big explosion to cause chaos and to kill a number of people. I just feel like the explosion, like, it was built up to be a lot bigger than it actually was. Mercer also wasn't expecting this to happen, so he didn't actually build up, like, how much damage this explosion would do or anything like that. So, personally, I feel Mercer maybe pulled his punches to allow the heroic sacrifice and make sure everyone can escape. But, like, I'm a little perturbed at, like, how big they originally said the explosion was supposed to be and how small it kind of was. But other than that, it was fantastic.
The easy answer is if he cast the spell, then he just cast the spell weaker. There you go. Problem solved.
But it wasn't a spell. That's a bomb.
You said he cast the spell into his core.
He cast a spell into his core to blow up his core.
Yeah, so he just cast, like, a weak spell.
No, he cast a high level. He cast a level 6. Level 5, level 6, Guiding Bolt.
He cast a high level spell,
but it's not the spell that blew him up. It's the spell that caused the reaction to blow up his core.
You're just nitpicking from the sound of it.
No, I don't think it's great. I feel like he pulled his punches a little at that because he was allowing that sacrifice to happen and to allow everyone to escape. But like, it seemed a little like hand-holdy in a sense.
Well, also, like, had it just blown up everybody, then everyone would be dead, and they'd have to start over.
TPKs happen in D&D, man.
Yeah, but it's different. It's different when you're doing, like, a show like that.
I think a TPK in Critical Role would be amazing to experience. We almost experienced it. Like, with what was going on the last episode, and this is not the first time a TPK almost happened with this group of characters. This first time they fought this enemy, they almost died originally. They lost, the character did die, that they went on a whole entire quest to get them resurrected because they were too low of a level to resurrect them. Like, it, or not too low of a level, but they ran out of spell slots to resurrect them, is what it was. Like, it's TPKs happen, and Mercer started the campaign with the player saying, this is going to be a harder campaign. Like, I am going full blown out at you. Like, I'm not pulling my punches, but it felt like, just a little bit, felt like he was pulling his punches, but that's all. That's all. It's just a little bit of a, it was great, it was like an awesome thing, but I'm a little like, I feel like he made it weak. I feel like he made this thing seem to be big, and it wasn't.
I think you're just being nitpicky.
I don't know, maybe, but also, maybe not. I don't know.
Just look, let the cool thing happen.
No, that's the thing. Like, it's I kind of understand the cool thing happening because it's like, all right, well, he's doing this heroic sacrifice. Like, I would let the cool thing happen, but like making it weaker just so that the heroic sacrifice works is kind of a little bit of a, like, I don't know. It was just weird because they made out this explosion to be bigger. That's all.
Maybe it was always supposed to be that big, and he just thought it was supposed to be bigger.
No, the way Mercer and other, like, the way Mercer has expressed it through the voice of other characters who were examining fresh cut grass, like, he was supposed to be a heavy bomb. Like, he was supposed to do a lot of damage. Like, in terms of dice, 20d8 is a lot of damage if you roll well enough, but in the terms of a 20 to 40 foot radius isn't that big of a damage.
No, but like, you can have a high yield, small, like, area explosion. Like, basically a controlled explosion.
Yeah, and like, if you were in like the middle of a crowd of people, sure, it would do a lot of damage, but it felt a little, the explosion felt lackluster, even though everything else was awesome about it.
Well, maybe you just need a better imagination.
I mean, a 40-foot radius is pretty massive.
A 40-foot radius is pretty massive, but when you're in a small, enclosed space, like, there was no shockwave to it. Like, it felt too small. Like, Burn was maybe 20 feet away from, was about 20 feet away from it, so it would be about a 20 to 30 foot radius, so a 40 foot diameter, 40 to 60 foot diameter. Like, it's not, you're right, it's not small, but it also, it didn't really sound like it did the amount of damage that it was built up to do, in terms of, like, where they were. It didn't cause a cave-in, it didn't collapse anything, it just made a crater where he was.
Maybe the mountain's made out of metal.
No, it's stone. But also, like, it didn't destroy magic items or anything like that. Like, they made it out to be a much bigger explosion than it really seemed to be. But, again, it's the rule of cool on that point. All right, he's doing this noble sacrifice. Let's make sure he does this noble sacrifice so that no one else gets hurt. I get the idea of pulling the punches. But also, I'm a little like, man, it felt weaker than it should have been.
Oh, no, you seem really upset about it.
No, I felt weaker.
I feel like you're just going to DNF the show now. You're never going to watch it again.
No, I'll watch it next week. I'm more upset about the fact that I knew this sacrifice was happening on Friday because people had already clipped it and posted it on their own personal TikToks and YouTube accounts before they even posted it on their YouTube channel. That's what I'm more mad about.
That's the internet. That stuff is why I just stopped going on social media, because everywhere you turn, people just immediately fucking spoil everything.
That's one thing about TikTok. I get caught in watching them too. There will be videos of just like people will take scenes from a TV show. One of the reasons I started watching The Rookie is because I saw a lot of the cold opens from The Rookie on TikTok, but it wasn't The Rookie's TikTok. It was just some random Joe Schmo's TikTok, and I was seeing a bunch of these clips. I'm like, well, now I kind of got to watch this show. And it's like, there are people that are just posting clips of movies and clips of TV shows on TikTok. And I'm like, well, this kind of sucks. And then, yeah, they stole this thing. They posted it Friday. And I'm like, oh, all I heard, it said, like, Critical Role spoilers. And it's real quick, Critical Role spoilers. And then, but I usually, like, ignore that because I'm up to date and people usually are cool. And they'll post Critical Role spoilers for anything older than this week, like, just any big spoilery event. But, like, usually the community doesn't post stuff until after this week. Like, after Monday or Tuesday. They wait until it gets onto YouTube, because people know that you can't always sit there and watch a 5-hour-long podcast or live stream on Thursday night at 10 o'clock at night. But, no. Nope.
Well, I mean, says you.
No, there's the community's usually pretty cool about that. But this is just one time. Like, when Laudna died, there was nothing like that. When Molly died, this was forever ago, and that was before TikTok, so it wasn't as big. But like when Laudna died, when other big things died, I'll see them like weeks later, not the day after. But let's move on.
All right, well, what's on the agenda?
On the agenda, we all should have watched a movie called Doctor Strange Over, How He Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Cobb went to Japan and did some Japan stuff, specifically Super Nintendo World, and I played and or beat a bunch of video games.
Yes.
It's been 2 weeks, guys. I did a lot.
You did some.
You're right. I thought it was there's actually, but like we also left out three things in the list just because of time based and whatnot. I've done more. I also started watching the 90s X-Men cartoon so I could watch 97 when I finished the 90s cartoon.
That's a good decision. That's a good cartoon.
Yeah.
All right. So what did you guys think of Doctor Strangelove?
It was interesting. I don't necessarily see why it gets put into the like top comedies of all time.
Same.
But that was a comedy?
Know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, no, I'm just, that's my response to that was a comedy. Like the only thing I can think of that would be comedic in that movie was Doctor Strangelove himself. And he was in for less than 5 minutes of the movie, or about 5 minutes of the hour and a half long movie was Doctor Strangelove. And that's really the only comedic thing. And the captain riding the bomb, like it was a movie. Most
of Mandrake stuff was pretty funny.
Who was Mandrake?
The British officer.
Was it? Was he funny?
I mean, funnier than most of the movie.
I don't.
The whole bit with the payphone.
I thought that was just dumb.
I mean, that was dumb. That whole bit got a legitimate laugh out of me because it was just so absurd.
And that's the thing. Like this is also a according to Wikipedia, it's a political satire black comedy. And it's also from the early 60s. So, like, sense of humor is just different. Also, it was Stanley Kubrick, who, like, not known for his comedies.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who Stanley Kubrick is.
Of course you don't.
No, I don't. I love movies. I know nothing about movies. Drew.
You love kaiju movies.
I love movies. I do. I enjoy movies. But, like, I will be honest and say that this was just a movie. I didn't find much entertainment value out of this movie. I personally thought it was a waste of watching because nothing happens.
The bomb drops, right? That's something.
The movie is, we need to stop the bomb from dropping. Let's do all of the things, and none of the things we do matter, so the bomb still drops. And the world ends anyway. Like, to me, like, when you're trying to build off that as a comedy, back in the 60s, that probably worked. But nowadays, for me, it doesn't work for me. And I'm just sitting here
You know why I think it didn't work for you? It fucking didn't end in the tropey way movies all end nowadays, where, the problem actually got solved.
Like, one of the most memorable movies and one of the movies I love watching is Avengers Infinity War, that does not end in the tropey way where everything gets solved.
Because that wasn't the end of that movie.
Yes, you can say it wasn't, but it was. Even though it was a two-parter, it was the end of that movie. That movie ended with everything being bad.
I mean, it's the same reason that like people generally consider Empire the best of the Star Wars movies, because it doesn't end with any sort of resolution. Like, it ends in an unexpected way by the good guys not winning. Infinity War is similar. Like, it ends in a way where the good guys don't win. Right. It's just, you have the expectation that there is still another movie coming.
Technically within that movie, like, there's end credits that there's more movie to happen.
But then you have something like this where, it's just a one and done. And it is, it's a 50-year-old, 60-year-old movie?
60.
60-year-old movie. 60
years ago.
Like, it doesn't work the same way it did 60 years ago, because a lot of it, in a weird way, like, some of it is actually relevant. Like, while we are not currently in a Cold War with the Soviet Union, there is still a lot of just unstable everything going on in the world. Like, the idea of a deranged fucking U.S. military person somehow managing to set off like a nuclear bombing run. Not as far-fetched as it probably should be. The same thing as another country having some sort of like backup, like if our country is ever bombed, we're just going to destroy the entire fucking planet. Like, if we can't have it, no one can.
Mm-hmm. I think my issue with the movie is because I could get a sense of attempt of comedy. And I think my issue is when it comes to events like this, when it comes to like the whole scenario with the president talking to Dmitry, to the Russian leader, like, and be like, yeah, well, I'm happy too. Are you happy? Like, it's like, this is not helping anything.
No, but it was satirical to the time, right?
Yeah, right. And that's why, like, for me, it doesn't work. If this movie was made today and it was satirical to today, maybe it would work more for me. Like, a movie that old, to me, it doesn't work for me because it didn't add anything. It didn't add anything to me. And it didn't make me laugh.
I didn't really laugh at all throughout it. Excuse me. I didn't dislike it or anything, though. It was just more of a, I understand kind of what they were aiming for, but it doesn't quite land 60 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, it's a little too eerily similar to what the world was also like 60 years ago. Like, we just haven't learned anything.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Rich, just to circle back, I brought up a list of Kubrick's filmography. Mm-hmm. Some of the most famous ones that I'm sure you know, Fear and Desire, Killer's Kiss, The Killing, Paths of Glory.
Why are you sure I know these?
No, I'm just kidding. He also he did 2001: A Space Odyssey, A Clockwork Orange, Shining, Full Metal Jacket, Eyes Wide Shut. I named his first like five that I knew for a fact you wouldn't have heard of.
I've seen or know a few of those.
But he did Spartacus, which you may not have seen, but you definitely know the one scene from.
I think I've seen more Ben-Hur, not Spartacus. Ben-Hur is the one that has the what's it called? The horse racing, not horse racing, but chariot racing. Yeah, that's Ben-Hur. I've seen more of Ben-Hur. I haven't seen all of Ben-Hur, but I think I've seen bits and bobs of Spartacus. But
so Spartacus is the movie that has the everyone standing up saying, I'm Spartacus.
I know that part. I know that.
So
part.
Like,
I didn't know that was Kubrick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that one, it's a little campier than a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also like that weird historical movie. So like, I feel like anything made that long ago that's historical just ends up being a little overly campy.
Mm-hmm.
Because frankly, even this was campy in a weird way. Like, it looks like a very low budget movie, but like it had a $1.8 million budget in 64.
Mm-hmm. This movie would be made in under $100 this year if it were made nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, like all the sets were very basic. Like,
yeah.
Some of the green screen with the plane was like, oh, Jesus Christ. You could tell this is real old.
I mean, the fact that they're constantly flying over water when they're flying into Russia, like, it's constantly flying over water the entire time.
Which is kind of funny, because it's like, all right, so you were only a few hours outside of Russia. I think it was 8 hours or something like that, right?
It took them 10 minutes to go 5 miles.
Look, man, back in the 60s, planes didn't fly real fast. Wonder they could stay in the air.
That whole end scene where it's taking him 10 minutes for him to fix the bomb thing and fly over and blow it up. 10 minutes to go 5 miles, man. All right, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but still, like, it seemed a little unreasonable how slow it took him to get
37 episodes for 5 minutes to pass in Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 100% agree. It's going to take how long for a week? It's going to take, like, what, 3 seasons for a week to pass in My Hero Academia? Like, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying. Like,
it's coming up on, what, its 7th or 8th season? It hasn't even been a full school year yet.
No, it hasn't, but technically, the war starts in the beginning of spring. So technically, it is their second year.
So their second year starts after the war. They just don't get to move up.
Yeah.
They basically all get held back because the world's at war.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, like they basically just go, like, we're not moving anyone to, like, the next grade until shit settles down.
Yeah. But yeah, look, I don't think this is a bad movie. This is a movie. It was definitely something. It did not hit for me, for sure.
I mean, look, Peter Sellers was great as, like, four different characters, or three different characters.
Was there one person who played three different characters?
Yep. Yeah, he played Strangelove, the President, and Mandrake.
I didn't even realize that.
Right, yeah, exactly. So
it was actually, I was reading about it after the fact, because I'm looking at him, I'm like, why does, and it was initially like the President and Strangelove, I'm like, why do they look so similar? And that's when I realized they were both Peter Sellers, and then I saw that he was also Mandrake. Apparently the Columbia Pictures, the studio that made the film, that financed it, that was one of their requirements, was that Peter Sellers played at least four major roles in the movie.
Why?
Because apparently the previous movie he was in, of Kubrick's Lolita, he played a bunch of roles and the movie did really well. And he had a few other movies that he played multiple roles that also did well. So they just assumed any movie that Peter Sellers played at least three to four roles in would be a box office hit.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Apparently he also improvised a lot of his lines.
I couldn't tell, because I don't know. It just, the lines didn't, they seem to work fine, so it doesn't necessarily make sense that he improvised them, but I mean, I guess it makes sense that he improvised them if he's that good.
I mean, that's a good actor can improv things that sound accurate to the scene. I hope his thing at the end where he says, "Mein Führer, I can walk," with an improv. That just seems funny.
It probably was. I'm sure maybe the whole phone call scenario was improv. That's why they didn't have somebody. That's why they didn't have Dmitri on the other. Like, you didn't hear what the president of Russia was saying. You just had him saying what the president of Russia was. I mean, responding to what the president was saying.
That's possible. I know it's pretty common in, like, especially in sitcoms with like strong casts, that they'll do like two takes off the script and then they'll do like a few more where they just let the actors kind of like do whatever. This way, like, if the actors can come up with something better than what's on the script, they have like an option to roll with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a fine movie. Like, I'm glad I watched it. Like, I'm not angry I watched it, like some movies I've watched.
Yeah, I'm not angry, I'm not happy, I'm just, alright, I can scratch it off my list. If anybody ever asks me if I watched it, I'll probably forget the fact that I watched it, but then be like, oh yeah, I did watch that once.
It does look like the "Mein Führer, I can walk" line was improv.
Nice. As it should be. Anything else either you guys want to say about Dr. Strangelove?
No, not really.
Yeah, no.
All right. Well, in that case, we'll move along. Rich, I believe it is your pick for the next book club.
It is my pick, and I don't know which movie I want to pick. There's two that I want to pick from.
Well, close your eyes and point to one.
No. I'm going to talk it out with you guys. So the first one that I want to pick is Romeo plus Juliet. It's 1996.
Wait, with Leonardo DiCaprio?
With Leo DiCaprio and Claire Danes.
I've seen that a bunch of times. It's got "When Doves Cry" in it.
It's all in iambic pentameter, or whatever it is. It's like in Shakespearean, but it's modern day. Which
It's a real fucking weird movie to watch. It is literally Romeo and Juliet just set against a modern backdrop.
Which, like, I've never seen it, and I think it'd be ridiculous. I don't think I'd ever watch it outside of this. But, like, I think that's ridiculous. And John Leguizamo's in it. It was fantastic. And so, like,
He's like a gangster quoting Shakespeare while shooting people with, like, a semi-automatic, like, gun.
Yeah, because he's so one. He's one of the Montagues or Capulets. He's one of the heads. He's one of their uncle.
He's on Romeo's side, I believe, if I remember.
Yeah, he's Romeo's uncle or something like that. I've seen, like, a clip here or there of it. The other one. Now, look. This technically is an adaptation, but it also technically is a remake. Is Mean Girls musical from last year?
So that's not an adaptation, though.
I mean, it is, because it was a movie that became a Broadway musical that now is a movie.
I don't think
it's an adaptation of a Broadway musical.
Yeah, but when I said adaptation, I said books or comics or stuff like that, not an adaptation of another movie.
But it's not an adaptation of a movie. It's an adaptation of a musical.
Which is not a book or a comic or anything like that.
I mean, technically, Romeo and Juliet is an adaptation of a play.
Which is written.
But, I mean, everything's written, God.
That's fair. No, to be honest, like, I wouldn't mind watching the Mean Girls thing, but I do not have Paramount Plus.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Yeah, Mean Girls is on Paramount Plus, so you guys would have to figure out a way to get it. I'm more likely to just watch that myself. And less likely to watch Romeo plus Juliet myself. So I think we're going to go with Romeo plus Juliet. But when I get a chance and I pick remakes or musicals again or something, it's going to be Mean Girls. Whatever my first pick to be able to be pick something is probably going to be Mean Girls. So be prepared because I want to watch it.
Or I might just watch it this weekend. Watch it on your own then.
I might just watch it this weekend if I have time. I don't even know if I'm going to have time. But yeah, Romeo plus Juliet is on Hulu. It was made in, what, 96? Yeah,
yep.
96. Or released in 96. It's just, it's ridiculous hearing them speak in Shakespearean in modern day using machine guns and shit.
Yeah, it is quite a movie. I haven't seen it in probably 15 years, but it is quite a movie.
Yeah.
I did actually, I almost watched the Mean Girls remake musical, whatever the fuck it's called, because it was on the plane.
Nice.
Like it was one of the movies like in the seat back thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize the director of Romeo plus Juliet also did Moulin Rouge.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Baz Luhrmann.
I've never seen Moulin Rouge.
It's fine. It's a jukebox musical. Like,
yeah.
Some of the songs are catchy, some of the songs aren't.
Yeah. But anyway, Cobb, you got to hang out with Mario?
I did.
And Peach?
Yep.
Was Bowser there?
He was. He's a bad guy.
DK?
Not yet. Kind of, but not yet.
Bullshit. Bullshit. Well, go ahead. Tell us about Japan.
So I'll start with Super Mario or Super Nintendo World. It is maybe the coolest fucking theme park section I have ever seen in my life. So I don't know if they do it the same way in the US park in California, but it is. You have to have like a timed entry ticket to get into it. So basically, like, you basically either need a fast pass that you purchase like with your park ticket, or you have to hope that you can get a reservation on the app the day of. When we bought our Universal tickets, they did not have fast passes left. They were sold out. They do them weird, and again, I don't know if Universal in general does it or if it's just a Japan thing. But theirs are like little like bundle packages where it's not just a generic fast pass you can use for like one ride for each ride in the park the way I know some theme parks do. It's here's a pass for this amount of money that is four or five specific rides, and it's usually like three set in stone and then like two others that you get to like pick from like two or three options to go with. All of those that included Nintendo World were sold out. So when we got there, I opened up the app and they have basically like a standby lottery. And the earliest one I was able to like enter in for was like their 4:20 to 5:20. So it's nice. Just, it's not an hour that you have to be in the park, in that section of the park. It's just, you have to enter within that hour and then you can stay in there as long as you want.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we entered it and then we wandered around the park for like three more hours. Cause this was at like noon ish. And, right, we went through the Harry Potter park. We did the Hogwarts like castle ride, which we have now done in three different Universal parks. There's only one left, but we'll probably never go to the Beijing one.
I feel like you have to do it now.
I mean, like, kind of, right? But
gotta go to Beijing.
But we were literally sitting eating food, which I'll talk about in a second too. And I opened the phone, I looked at it, and I'm like, oh shit, we actually got one of the lotteries, and we were able to go into Nintendo World.
Nice.
And so it's like down this long path, like kind of like wrapped around, they still have Jaws there. So they have like a whole area that's Jaws themed. It's supposed to be Amity Bay from Jaws, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to wrap all the way around that. And like you walk down this long path and then you come to like a little opening and there's a warp pipe and you walk into the pipe and it's super long. And as you start walking into it, the ground starts to change from like the park bricks into like castle bricks like you'd find in like the Mario castles.
Nice.
And the walls have like, the walls are black, but they have the green lights going down them like you're going through like a warp. And then you exit this pipe into fucking the Magic Kingdom. And it's incredible. They've got...
In the Magic Kingdom? Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, jeez. Exactly.
Man, Japan's wild.
But yeah, like, you get in there, and there's question mark blocks and bricks and Goombas and giant piranha plants and coins just spinning freely in the air. And the perspective you're at for all that stuff when you come in, you can't tell how it's all working, but it all looks so incredibly real. Like the coins are just sitting there floating in the air, shining and spinning in a circle like they do in the games. And it's like, that looks too real to actually not be. Then, of course, like, at a certain point, you can get up higher in the park and look down on that stuff, and you can see the little tracks and stuff that they're on. But it all still looks very good. Like, all the piranha plants, like, moving around and, like, opening and closing their mouths and, like, leaning towards people and stuff. They do a good job with perspective, where a lot of that stuff tends to be up a little bit higher, so it'll never get quite close enough to people for them to be able to pick out a lot of the like, fakeness in it. And then they do have mascots wandering around. There, Mario and Luigi were walking around. Princess Peach was in like a little gazebo sort of thing. They have the thing that you come out of from the warp pipe is her castle. So, like, the warp pipe is in her castle, and like, as you're walking through it, it's got pictures like from Mario 64. Like, there's one of like Bomb Battlefield that you'll pass. And then you come out, you turn around, and it's Peach's castle, like with her like stained glass picture at the top and all. And then Bowser's castle is in the far back, and that's where the main ride is for that area. The biggest downside is it is a pretty small, cramped area. Like, there's not a lot there right now. It's basically like a lot of visual stuff to look at that's cool. And then it's got the Yoshi ride that is more of like a small kid's ride. Like, it's a little minecart thing in Yoshi's. And then you've got the Mario Kart ride, which name I forget. So when you get in there, that's the ride with the line. We waited in line for 110 minutes. Yeah, it was a long, long wait. They at least did a good job with like the decorations in the queue. Like, there's a lot of stuff to like point at and take pictures of and like look at while you're in line. Lots of like Easter eggs and things from like different Mario Kart games and just like the Mario universe in general. And then the ride itself was just really awesome. You're given like this plastic helmet that looks like a Mario hat. And when you get into the cart, there is a face plate thing that just magnets onto the front of it that acts as like a VR AR sort of thing. So as you're going around the track and looking around, you're seeing different Mario characters in carts in front of you. And you're seeing like the question mark blocks to pick up items. And you're actually like shooting the items at like Koopa kids and stuff like that. And Bowser is like riding around also, trying to beat him to the end of the race.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It was a very cool ride. Would have been cooler with a shorter wait, but was still well worth the wait. Mm-hmm. The downside is apparently that park actually, like, Universal Japan closes at 7 o'clock on weeknights. Oof. So we did not realize that. And, so Universal Japan is in Osaka, which is a 3-hour Shinkansen ride from Tokyo. Mm-hmm. So we didn't actually get to Universal until, like I said, like around noon or so. Because we took the Shinkansen down at 8, and then there's like another half hour, 40 minutes worth of trains you have to take to get to like their City Walk area. And luckily the train station is at City Walk. So like, you step off the train and you're in that area of Universal. And then we had to check into our hotel because we just stayed down there for the night. But so like, by the time we got in there, we only had 7 hours to like spend in the park. And 2 of those hours were spent just in line and on the Mario ride.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, but we still like, we got to walk around the whole park. Like I said, we did do the Harry Potter ride. There were a couple other ones that I wanted to do, and we didn't have the time for it. Like, I wanted to do Jaws because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Same thing, like, they have a Jurassic Park area there. The main Jurassic Park, like, watery sort of ride was closed, but the roller coaster one wasn't. And they have a bunch, they do theme stuff there. Like they, what did they have? Their one main roller coaster, which, like, the U.S. equivalent would be, like, I think it's, like, the Aerosmith roller coaster or something like that in Universal over here, is this,
Aerosmith is Disney.
Is it Disney? Shit. Yep. There is some sort of roller coaster at Universal, right?
The only roller coaster I can think of, there's two, is the Hulk and the Dueling Dragons.
At really?
Islands of Adventure. Those are the only two I can think of. At Universal Studios, I'm hard-pressed to even think there of any sort of roller coaster at Universal Studios.
You might be right, then. Either way, they have a roller coaster there, and they theme it out for, like, different events. So right now, it's themed out for Demon Slayer.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
They do a bunch of different stuff over there, because, like, they did Monster Hunter 1 a while back, and usually they have
Monster Hunter going on right now.
Yeah, really? Well, I guess probably Rise?
So it's for the 20th or 25th anniversary of the
20th anniversary of the games.
We saw there. I sent you pictures on Discord of there was a store in Tokyo we went into that had like a whole 20th anniversary merchandise set up. But there was a lot of Monster Hunter stuff here and there. Universal, I forget exactly what it was because we didn't really like approach it, but they did have something Monster Hunter themed. They had a couple My Hero themed things, like 4D rides, kind of like the Terminator ride would be.
Mm-hmm.
They had way more of like the like kid like toon sort of area with theirs was like Snoopy and Sesame Street themed, but it like took up like a pretty big chunk of the park, surprisingly.
Nice.
And then they had the Harry Potter side, which their Harry Potter park was way better than the U.S. ones. We only tried to eat at the U.S. one in Orlando, and the food and stuff down there was fucking garbage. It was all just fried shit. It tasted bad. Their butter beer was just so sweet it made you sick to your stomach. In Universal in Japan, they actually serve English food. Like, they have a Sunday roast you can get with, like, slices of roast beef with gravy, mashed potatoes, Yorkshire pudding, some vegetables. It was delightful.
Nice. Yeah, gotta love that southern Florida American English food with just fish and chips. Is probably all they would want to serve you down there.
Yeah, they like fish and chips and like fried chicken, I think. Like, none of it was good down there. Like, we ended up getting sick at Universal in Orlando and just leaving like at like 3 p.m. because it was hot, mm-hmm. like uncomfortable, like all the food was bad and heavy, and it's but this park was like, it was delightful. They had lots of like fun themed foods and drinks. Like they had a bunch of Pokemon stuff, so you could get a Squirtle themed churro.
Nice.
Or they had some sort of frozen drink that they served in like a little Bulbasaur.
Oh, they what about the ice cream cone Pokemon? They don't have like a double cone ice cream cone or something, you know, like that.
They might. We didn't really go into a lot of the food places.
That Pokemon's going to be so obscure. They're not going to have it. They're not going to have something like that.
That's fair. They did have some sort of little cake thing that was just a Pikachu butt.
Okay.
In
Nintendo World, was there a peach? Well, not a peach cake. Was there a strawberry and cherry cake? Two layers strawberry and cherry cake.
So they had a couple different sweets. There was definitely some sort of cake that was like Princess Peach themed. There was also like this. We got this drink from like a Hello Kitty booth cart thing that was I think it was like some sort of peach drink. But it had like the jelly that you sometimes get in bubble tea, and also like strawberry popping bubbles, and it was delightful.
Nice.
We wanted to get the those Mario pie things that they do, where it's like the cakey like pancakey shell that's like either like bright red or bright green with some sort of like fruit and whipped cream in it. But they close half an hour before the park does because they want to get through the line before the park closes.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we got out of the Mario Park and over to where that booth was, because that was actually like a store closer to like the entrance of the park, they had already closed their doors, which was a bummer. But, you know, these things happen. They sell those in the U.S. park, too. So, you know, we could always get it here at some point.
Are you talking about the green shell calzone filled with yakisoba and cheese?
No, but that I remember seeing that before. I don't know if they still make that there or not, but that thing looked amazing.
I'm looking on their website. On
do they still
website.
Have that?
Yeah.
No, these are just like they're like a dessert treat.
Oh, the only there's drink bottles that are mushrooms and the power up that is green and red mushrooms. They're drink bottles. And then, yeah, I see the Yoshi things with strawberries and melon. And then their main restaurant, Toad's House, they have a burger, which looks delicious. They have some spinach carbonara, which looks delicious.
So this isn't actually in this isn't in the actual Nintendo place. This is actually in I'm actually looking at it now. It's somebody's pharmacy, and it's currently themed as a Mario cafe.
Were you talking about?
Yeah. So those cake things that I wanted to get are not sold in the actual Mario in the Nintendo land. I just sent a link in the Discord. So it's a pancake sandwich, and it's strawberry shortcake or grape no bake cheesecake, and it's either the strawberry is Mario and the grape is Luigi.
Nice.
But yeah, like all sort they just do a better job with like the silly like theme stuff there, like 100%. We went one of the few other things we actually got to like go do was
he said doo-doo.
I did say doo-doo. They had a Universal Monster rock show.
Okay.
Where it was hosted by Beetlejuice. And it had Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, the Bride of Frankenstein, Wolfman, and just two random girls that danced and sang. And it was just funny because everything, all the dialogue was in Japanese, except a couple of times some of the characters did speak English. And it looked like at least one or two of them were actually like, they were not Japanese. I don't know whether they were American or British or Russian or what, but they weren't Japanese. So like occasionally they would have lines in English, but all the songs were in English. So, and they did all sorts of stuff. They did It's Raining Men, YMCA, the Santana song Smooth.
It's definitely a dated show for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean the newest songs were like the late 90s, early 2000s. But like it was fun and goofy and people seemed to have a lot of fun with it. I found the Hello Kitty drink was a strawberry and tangy white Easter drink. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was delicious. That park was just a ton of fun. We had a great time there. We got dinner in City Walk at like this like little Chinese place, which was also delicious. And then we were exhausted afterwards and went back up to our hotel and soaked our feet in Epsom salt. Because we went to Universal was Wednesday for us. So like we spent 7 hours on our feet on Wednesday. On Monday, we went to Kyoto and we walked 10 miles. Many times upstairs because of all the shrines and stuff having just an absurd amount of hills and stairs. So by Wednesday, my feet were dead. I was in considerable uncomfort after like, I don't know, 45 minutes of walking. I'm just like, man, I need to sit down for a little while. Everything hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time though. Trying to think what else was there that we did? Everybody in Universal is so incredibly nice, like all the people that work there, in a way that like American people in theme parks just aren't. But we got multiple times where like people in shops were like just like, because we were being polite, like as we were like buying things, as polite as we can be, not really speaking the language, they were just like offering us free stickers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, it's your first time here, like here's like free stickers for this side of the park.
Nice.
Yeah, so like we have like a bunch of like little stickers now for different stuff. They also, so like Japan has like a very big like gift giving thing when you like you're visiting people. Mm-hmm. And usually it's like food based, like you bring some sort of like dessert or snack, and like that is the thing you bring for a host if like you're going to somebody's house. So like their gift shops are just full of like food gifts, like tins and little like novelty packs of like cookies or cakes or candy or something like that. And they actually had some really cool ones. We bought one pack that is, it's either three or four different blocks from Mario. So there's like a question mark block, a regular brick. I think there might be a music note and something else. And they're full of like little individually wrapped cookies. And then we got like a tin that is a Demon Slayer themed tin with like Demon Slayer themed like snacks inside.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had cool ones that were like warp pipes with Mario coming out of it that were full of individually wrapped cookies. And Donkey Kong barrels. Again, full of like cookies. Excuse me.
Nice.
The only problem with those were they were large and oddly shaped. And we had no way that we were going to be able to fit those into our suitcases to come home. It wasn't happening. As it was, we bought a little too much stuff, and packing was a little bit of like a Tetris thing, like moving things between our two like suitcases to like get it to all fit.
So one of the YouTubers I watch, her name's Jaden Animations. She does a lot of animation stuff, and she just got sent. She went to Japan on a trip. I think Nintendo brought her and somebody else, Alpha Red, I think, on a trip to Japan, and they brought their suitcases and like three others each for just whatever they were going to buy, and they spent like two to three weeks there. They ended up having to go out and buy another like five suitcases each because they bought that much shit. And she even said at one point, she's like, we bought this for other, most of the stuff we bought was stuff for other people, but it was just so cute, we needed to get it. But like, they ended up leaving it with like eight bags each or something like that of just luggage.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Especially like if Nintendo flew them out there, like that was thousands of dollars they didn't have to spend to get there. So
yeah, and Nintendo flew them out there and put them up for a week, and then they spent another week or two out there themselves.
Yeah, whereas like we definitely spent a lot while we were there, but like it was a little bit easy. It was easy because the yen isn't worth a whole lot right now.
Yeah.
So last time we went, it was more like a one for one. Like 1,000 yen was about $10. Now it was like 1,000 yen was like $6.40 or something like that. So like the more you spent, like technically the cheaper things were. Like I got an in-box copy of Final Fantasy IV from a little game shop for it's just sitting here. It was 980 yen, which would be $6 right now.
That's wild to me.
I got an in box, and like it's not perfect, but it's in actually really good condition. Copy of this game for $6.33 is technically what I paid.
Because in the United States, that would cost you like 70, 80 bucks.
Yeah. So some stuff is overpriced there. Like a lot of used game stuff has gone up in a bad way. I was trying to find a copy of Pokemon Green, and there was one shop like right on like the main street in Akihabara that had like a cartridge only copies, like just on like a little like peg rack right by their door, that the cheapest one was, let's see, how much was it before? Was about $35. Which like isn't absurd, but also $35 for a 30-year-old game, like that literally just the cartridge, I'm like, no thank you. And a store like two shops down had a boxed copy that was $151.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I'm just like, this would be like a fun little novelty, but like I don't need it that much that I'm willing to spend that kind of money. The Final Fantasy IV was just like, it was a random, I happened to see it while in a very small shop that actually Papa showed us last time we were there. Looking again to see if they had Pokemon Green. And I'm just like, oh shit, Final Fantasy IV. And like grabbed it real quick. And actually, for comparison, the shop that had the cartridge only of Pokemon for like the $35 also had copies of Final Fantasy 4 and 6 in box for probably, I forget exactly how much they were, but they were probably closer to like 20 or 30 a piece. The box, it could have been that they were in slightly better condition, but not like obviously so.
Yeah.
So you're talking $6 for an inbox copy versus $30 from like that main street store.
Yeah.
So like certain things are just prices have gone up because they know people will pay more for a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Cause like we saw Jess and Papa a bunch of times while we were there. Papa was actually kind enough to pick us up from the airport when we got there.
Nice.
Which was very swell of him because we were fucking exhausted. The quick fun travel story. We left on Friday the 5th. Was it the 5th? Yeah. So not this Friday that just passed, the one before. Our flight out of Philadelphia was at 9:30 in the morning. Our flight, we had a layover in Detroit that was only supposed to be like an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then we were supposed to leave Detroit at like 1 or 2 o'clock. And then we would have gotten to Japan around like 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. because time zones and all that bullshit, which totally fine. Like, that's about what we had last time. Get there late afternoon. By the time you like get out of the airport, get through customs and like get to the hotel, it's like 6-ish. And then like you can grab something to eat, kind of just like hang out, chill, decompress, go to sleep at like a regular time and like be ready to go the next day. Woke up that Friday morning to, sorry for the inconvenience, your flight has been delayed till 4 o'clock. So now we had like 2 to 3 more hours stuck in Detroit, which then put our plane arriving at like 6:30, 7 o'clock in Japan, which means we weren't getting out of there until at least 8 o'clock at the earliest. And then for whatever reason, the plane just wasn't ready until 5 o'clock.
Of course.
Like they didn't start boarding us until about 5 o'clock. So they kept coming on like every 10 minutes. It's like, hey, they're still cleaning. It's going to be like 15 to 20 more minutes. And like
they had to bolt the door panels back on or something.
Like either somebody shit all over the bathroom.
Probably.
Or something was broken. They just didn't want to tell us it was broken. But yeah, so yeah,
they had to rebolt the doors on.
Yeah. But yeah, so we were stuck in Detroit for way longer than we wanted to. Finally got there. By the time we got like through like the airport stuff, it was close to like 9 o'clock. But like I had messaged Papa earlier because we had talked to him about grabbing food when we got there. I'm like, hey man, our stuff got super delayed. We're not going to be there till like 8-9 o'clock. I have no idea what time we'll actually get into like Tokyo proper. And he's like, well, what airport are you going to? And I told him, and he's like, well, why don't I come pick you guys up? Like, I'd be driving into the city anyway. Like, it's not that big of a detour to like swing by the airport. So he grabbed us from the airport, which was just the nicest thing in the world.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Took us into Japan, or like into Tokyo proper. We dropped off our shit at the hotel, checked in, and then we spent probably an hour trying to find some place to eat because fucking Tokyo closes at like 10 o'clock every night of the week.
Even on a Saturday?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, so there are a couple things that are open late. Like, arcades are generally open late, but, like, restaurants aren't. Restaurants and stores tend to close early, it seems. And a lot of restaurants, they might be open till 11, but they stop doing food orders at, like, 10:30, because they're very much a... It's not like here, where if the restaurant is open till 10 o'clock, you can walk in at 9:58 and expect to be seated. And, like, the staff's just fucked until you're ready to leave. They're like, oh no, we're no longer going to take your food order after this time. So like, if you can get in here and order food in 5 minutes, go for it. Like, you can sit here, you can eat, but you'll only have about 20 minutes after you get your food to eat and get the fuck out.
Yeah.
So we found like a little beef bowl place to eat, which like ended up being like delicious. It was like a great, like, we just spent a whole bunch of time on a plane and just needed like comfort food. And Erica was able to find stuff by just like, she ordered all the sides basically.
Mm-hmm.
So like they had like a piece of like grilled mackerel and like weird stuff like that. So she just made like a meal out of like sides and was completely satisfied with it, because it was that and the beef bowl that I had were both leaps and bounds better than the food that served us on the planes.
Because of course
that food is barely passable as food.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then on the way home, we also had a very long layover, but this one was expected. We left Tokyo at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on this past Saturday, the 13th. So 4 in the afternoon on the 13th, got to Minnesota, 2 p.m. that same Saturday, which is fucking weird.
Time travel, baby.
And then we had an... So we actually got to Minnesota like an hour and a half early somehow, because apparently, so when we got food in the airport, one of the people that was working there explained to us that flights on the weekends tend to get places quicker than they do during weekdays, because there are fewer flights apparently, so there's less weird routings where planes have to go like out of the way to get to the same destination. They can kind of just take those straight routes that they normally would. So we got to Minnesota at like, we were supposed to get there at 2, we got there at like 12:50.
Mm-hmm.
And then our flight home was until 8 o'clock that night.
Oof.
Yeah, it was a long time, and we were both fucking exhausted. By the time we got home, we had been up for 27 hours because we had just naturally woken up around 8 o'clock Saturday morning in Japan, and then, you know, had a very long day after that. But
yeah,
But we did get breakfast at Denny's before we left Japan.
Nice.
Their Denny's, real fucking different. They don't have a Grand Slam. They don't have the fresh and fruity Rudy Tutu breakfast. They do have hamburg steaks and pancakes, though. Or French toast. I'm sorry, they don't have pancakes. They have French toast.
Pancakes is weird.
Yeah. So breakfast in Japan's not really like a thing like it is here. Like, especially like the confectionery stuff, like your pancakes, waffles, French toast. You can find them places, but a lot of times they're actually more of a dessert than like breakfast foods. Mm-hmm. A lot of their breakfast foods are like fish, rice, soup, maybe a salad.
Yeah.
Or if you're a middle school student, just a piece of buttered toast, like in every anime.
Yeah.
And like legit, like some menus, like some of like the early morning menus did just have plain toast as an option.
Isn't that what she ate in that movie, on that time loop movie we watched too in the morning? She ate buttered toast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they do. But other than that, like
don't sleep on the buttered toast. Buttered toast is great.
It is. It's just very funny that like that is like an actual meal option at some restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other than that, all the food was great. One of the sushi places we went to had Monster Hunter themed sushi.
Nice.
It was actually with meat. Like they had like roast beef and stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, we went to the Tokyo Skytree, which is apparently the third tallest building in the world. And you get to go up in it for like a fairly small fee. It is incredible how high up you are and how quickly it does it. The elevator gets you to the 350th floor in under 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're high enough up that you feel your ears pop as you're going up.
Yeah.
And then they have one part of it that has like the glass floor you can walk out on and like take a picture straight down.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. And they just have a bunch of shops and stuff there. Like they have, there's a Kirby cafe there that we weren't able to go to because reservations were crazy hard to get. But they did have like a Kirby store that we like bought some stuff in. They had the Pokemon Center that we bought stuff in. There's like Shonen Jump stores all over the place. There's actually a One Piece store that was in like a mall in Shibuya that we went to. Got to go see the Gundam again, this time at night where it was lit up and everything.
Nice. Now, how many times did Godzilla attack?
You know, we didn't see any Godzilla.
There's actually an entire hotel where like Godzilla is built out of the hotel. Stuff like that. I don't know that much.
We saw that last time. It's in Shinjuku. And we actually were not in Tokyo that much this time because we had like Sunday we were in Tokyo, but we went down to Yokohama, which is like it's like a city like just outside of Tokyo for the most part. And we spent a lot of time down there because it's only like a 40-minute train ride.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a Dr. Stone cafe that we were able to get reservations for.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monday, Wednesday, and half of Thursday, we were like in different cities. So it was really just Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday that we were really in Tokyo. And Thursday was the day where we went out to Odaiba, which is like a man-made island. And just kind of spent the whole day out there because there's like some malls out there. And that's where they have the big Gundam statue that didn't go away. And like we got dinner and stuff out there with Matt and Jess. And yeah, so like surprisingly just spent very little time in like Tokyo proper compared to like last time. So the only real touristy things we did in the city were we went to the Skytree and we went to Shibuya Crossing, which is like the big crazy street crossing area.
Yeah.
Yeah. But It's a fun place to go. It sucks getting there and getting home, but it is so cool when you're there. And we stayed in Akihabara this time just for like the just to do it more or less. And our hotel was connected to the train station, so we had a very short walk every day to go anywhere. And we were close to like all just the stupid anime and video game stores and arcades and there's like a little alleyway that led to our hotel. That had like a bunch of like cool food stuff you could buy, but also had a Taito game corner. So it was just two hallways full of crane game machines.
Mm-hmm.
I won something out of one of them. I actually won a guy statue from Naruto.
Nice.
And like we saw some of the other statues that were in that machine at like a store. I think it might have been the One Piece store. They're like $60 statues that I got for. I want to say like maybe 600 yen, so like $4.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. So like worked out all right. And just, yeah, just generally had a good time.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. Japan is somewhere that I always wanted to go to, but, like, at this point, I don't know if I can because of food. Figuring out gluten-free in Japan is going to be next to impossible, I feel.
No, so it's actually funny you say that. I have to sneeze, so give me a second. And of course, I can't sneeze now that I said I have to sneeze, but it's like right there, like built up in my sinuses.
I would say you need to keep the silence in here, but you're not going to track that to try to keep the silence in there.
No, I'm not. I finally sneezed, though. But so when we, like, basically like our last day, Erica mentioned that she had just felt better the whole time. All the food we were eating, like, she never felt like any like weirdness or digestive weirdness. And she's like, I wonder if I have like food allergies or like intolerances to something. And I'm like, well, you've had almost no bread or gluten the whole time we've been here.
Did you have soy sauce?
Not much.
Was there soy sauce in the sauces that you ate?
A little bit, but again, not compared to how much she would have when she would be.
Yeah. But I mean, there's gluten in soy sauce.
Because like we weren't really putting it on sushi or anything, because all the sushi just tastes good without it. So like she doesn't think she has celiac. She just thinks that maybe her body doesn't like that stuff as much as it used to. Which
happens. I mean, there's definitely non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, having a little soy sauce isn't necessarily going to flare up the way it would for you. But, you know, here, you know, having pastas and breads and stuff like that with basically three times a week, like, you're gonna notice it a little bit more.
I think it's just the fact that American cuisine is so many unnatural carbs and processed carbs in general. I don't think it has anything to do, in general, specifically with wheat for a lot of people. It's just processed carbs, bread, like crackers, like... I don't know. Like, you have more rice in Japan. I don't count that as processed.
Exactly. Like, she had a lot of rice. She had a lot of fish. Even like the couple of times that we got like some sort of dinner roll with a meal, it was actually a rice based flour. Like, it actually said it on the menu, like rice flour dinner roll or something like that. There wasn't a lot of like breads and like refined carbs like that. She also didn't have as much dairy as she normally would here either, because like cheese just isn't used the same.
Mm-hmm.
Though I will say we had a piece, we had like we went to a conveyor belt sushi, and one of the things they had was salmon on rice with like a basil pesto sauce kind of drizzled on top, like just a little bit, and a piece of mozzarella. And it was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, sounds good.
But yeah, Rich, like, you'd be surprised. Like, it wouldn't be that hard to like eat around gluten there, and like for not that much money. Like, even not with not counting the exchange rate being garbage right now. We went out with one of the nights we went out to eat with Matt and Jess. We went to a Okinawan place. Where Matt just basically like talked to the waitress and just ordered a whole bunch of stuff just for everyone to share, because the food's all like very unique.
Mm-hmm.
For food for four people, where we were all sufficiently full at the end, was like $60, like total for four people.
Yeah.
And none of it was fried. None of it had like breading or anything. The only thing that was really like breaded, we had a squid like fritter thing that actually tastes like funnel cake in a weird way. And dessert was like a donut, but everything else was just grilled or seared or raw or steamed. And yeah, like, you'd actually probably eat better there than you do here.
Maybe. I'd have to, if I'm going to any country outside of any non-English speaking country, it's a roll of the dice kind of thing. I'd have to do research.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I think you'd actually get by easier, and they do all still have like labels on there. Google Translate, much better at translating that stuff than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And we also found out that in grocery stores there, they sell U.S. meat significantly cheaper because it's garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, usually, like, when you get, like, imported meats, they're significantly more expensive because of the importing cost. but like U.S. meats are so bad that they're actually like dirt cheap over there.
You gotta wonder why Americans are so unhealthy,
right? Like
you wonder why Americans are so unhealthy.
But yeah, great time. Glad we went. Nice. We will certainly go back again. We were actually already talking, like, next time we go, we want to, like, instead of making like Tokyo like our like home base and like just traveling for like day trips, like actually spending like multiple days in different places, like actually going down to Osaka and spending like 2 or 3 days down there, because as it was, we spent a day and a couple hours down there, and really just for Universal, like we didn't see the city at all.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah, so we'll definitely go back again at some point.
Nice.
It was super nice to like catch up with Matt and Jess and like see their house and meet their kitty.
Yeah,
like houses out there are really cool. Like they're like small but like laid out nicely. Like better, I feel like they're laid out nicer than some of the houses here, unless you're spending like astronomical amounts of money on them.
Yeah,
and just fucking every bathroom in Japan has a fucking heated toilet seat and bidet, and it's even public restrooms. Like, you go into, like, a random train station bathroom, it's got a fucking heated toilet seat.
I don't understand why we haven't really adapted bidets over here. Like,
yeah,
the heated toilet seat, I don't really, it's fine, it is what it is. But the bidet, like, why have we not adapted bidets more in this country?
Because people are stupid, and they think that it makes them, like,
They don't want to be gay by getting water put up their butt.
Yeah. Exactly. And, like, I've heard people talk about, like, on, like, podcasts and stuff like that, getting them, and they just have, like, the cold water. I was like, that sounds fucking horrendous. Like, why would you want to squirt cold water at your butt?
No.
Like,
no,
at least get the fancy electric ones that, like, warm the water.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything's good. I had a great time.
Nice.
Now, Rich, what games did you play? Because you played a bunch of games.
I played a bunch of games. And there's even games on this list that I'm leaving out because of time. But I want to start with Sea of Thieves. You guys know I play Sea of Thieves every Thursday. And for the past few weeks, me and my crew have been working on doing the Shores of Gold storyline. So they have like these adventures you can take. They're called Tall Tales. It's what the Disney stuff was, the Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. There's like five of them. They're called Tall Tales. Their newest one that they have is an Escape from Monkey Island Tall Tale. And there's like three of them, and it's just like storyline and puzzles and exploration and like parkour stuff, and just like going through levels and exploring the seas and getting a little bit of a story. Well, we did the Shores of Gold, which is the very first one they ever incorporated into the game. It took us 9 sessions. It's 9 adventures, takes about 2 to 3 hours each, and it just tells this whole story about these shores of gold that have riches beyond belief, or this island that has riches beyond belief. You need to go around the seas and gather this big item that will protect your ship as you sail into what players call the Red Sea, or it's also known as the Shroud. It's basically the outer border of the map of the game. When you get there, you solve a couple of puzzles, and you run into a room with a bunch of gold. And then you get into a big boss fight, and you fight the big boss, and then it turns out, well, all the gold's cursed, so you can't touch it, but you can take the boss's skull, and you can sell that, and it makes you 5,000 gold. So essentially, the treasure was the friends we made along the way for this adventure. It wasn't really 9 weeks, it wasn't really worth it for the small amount of reward. But it was a cool story, because it tied into the book I read this year, and it is basically...
Oh, that's right. Scott, you read one of their things.
Yeah, it's basically the book sets up the Shores of Gold, the whole ending sequence, the whole last mission where you're on the island, and like as I'm running around the island, I'm recognizing things, and I'm like, oh, this is from the book. That's from the book. And my one friend who's also read it, she's like, I'm like, do you recognize these statues? Do you recognize this? What about that banner up there? She's like, what are you talking? No, no. And then at one point she's like, wait, Walnuts, is this? I'm like, this is the end of the book. And she's like, oh, wow, I did not know that. I'm like, yeah, it's really cool. Even the boss that you fight at the end of the thing was like the main, quote, the bad guy at the end of the book. Like, it was really cool, and it got me shockingly emotional after beating it, just because then the Pirate Lord comes out and he gives you this little monologue about the, basically, the Sea of Thieves and the treasure we get as the friends along the way, blah, 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 bullshit. But it's just, like, the music gets all really nice, and it has this whole, like, it tells you about your adventure and shows all the people that you met, and I'm just like, this is really cool. This was really cool. I love this stuff. I hope they incorporate more. We're eventually going to do the Escape from Monkey Island stuff. We already did the Disney stuff forever, like, last year at some point. But, like, this one was really cool, and it just, I wanted to talk about it, because, like, it ties directly into the book. The book is canon for the game, and it all ties directly in together. It was just, it was really cool that I wanted to talk about it real quick. Another game I played is a new game, came out recently. It's called Pacific Drive.
That sounds familiar, but I'm not sure why.
I mean, it's been in a few, like, announcement things. I don't know if it's on anything besides PC, though, but it is a survival game where, like, your, quote, your base is basically your car, but not quite. It's a little more different than that, but it's, you are a delivery driver, and you are driving to deliver something. It takes place around the late 80s, early 90s, and you're driving across the Olympian Exclusion Zone, which is this area that has these weird dimensional phenomenons that, like, turn the regions into unstable landscape. And so at times randomly the landscape is just becomes unstable. You have to escape and get to safety to a stable area. You get pulled into the exclusion zone and you find a car that is also known as a, quote, a remnant, which is like has different energy to it. It's weird. And your main goal essentially is to escape. And so you go, you find this this garage that you can start repairing your car, and then when you go to escape, or when you go to explore, you basically, you get a map point, and you pick a point on a map based on where you've already been. So, like, say you go to point A1. After you clear A1 and escape from there, you can then now go to, like, A2 and A4, because it'll branch off into separate areas, so then you can skip A1 and just go to the next one. And, like, it took me probably about 45 minutes to get through one section that I didn't even need to go into. It was just, like, side stuff. But it's just, like, it's really cool, because you're going around, you're exploring these regions, you're trying to get supplies, you're learning about different strange anomalies, like, there's floating rocks, or there's the things that freak me out the most, there are mannequins that, like, are anomalies, and sometimes they're just not there, and sometimes you turn around and turn back, and there they are, like weeping angels. They're called tourists, by the way, those anomalies. There was one that I ran into, was just a buzzsaw blade on the ground, and it was cutting back and forth across a red line. And so you go into these regions, you explore the POIs, and you gather supplies, you scan any of the anomalies that are happening, and then you grab the devices you need to teleport out of that region and go to the and you go back to your garage and you can repair your car, fix it up. Or depending on, like, the supplies you gathered or the items you got or the anomalies you scanned, you can go to your fabricator machine and fabricate blueprints or ways to upgrade your garage base to be able to craft better things or to hold better things. So I at the end of my last session, I was able to craft a bigger backpack because I was able to craft a clothing station or not a clothing station, but like a cloth station, a sewing bench, basically. And it's just, it's a really cool concept of a game that I've been looking forward to ever since I learned about it. I think it's like year and a half ago that it was announced, and I haven't seen a lot of people play it. So after having beaten Subnautica, I was like, all right, this is my new series. And so I've played for about 2 hours right now, and I got the idea of the gameplay loop, and I'm so excited to play this game. It's really cool. I am playing it as a Let's Play. And
I was just about to ask whether this was a,
Yeah, this is my new Wednesday Let's Play. And the one bad thing about it is I'm such in awe about this game and I'm being very quiet at times. And so I need to keep talking, or I need to keep having stuff to say, because when I'm cutting it down, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of just nothing, and I gotta be talking sometimes. I gotta be talking things through. But it's a really cool game. I like it a lot, and so I'm excited to keep playing more of it. Nice. But it is very new. Like, I think it came out in March, maybe February. Like, it's within 2 months, and it's on Steam. It's only $20 or $30, something like that. It's really cool. I think people should check it out. Or you can check out my Let's Play series. The first episode dropped today. And then the last thing that I really wanted to talk about is I finally, after 102 hours, beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Finally beat it. Holy Kingdom Hearts Batman is without spoiling anything, is really the best I can say, is Holy Kingdom Hearts Batman. Literally,
That was a really quick chat then.
No, like that's the best I can say about the finale, the end of the game, and everything. Is just like, what? I have gripes about the ending. A good number of gripes about gameplay decisions that they made with the ending. That I don't understand why they did this. I don't want to spoil too much for you, Cobb, so I'm gonna not really go into them until you beat it. If you ever beat it, because I don't know if you're ever going to beat this game.
I'll get back to it. I'll probably actually start playing again this week.
But I have some major gameplay gripes about it. 6 out of 10. As the best I can give it, 6 out of 10. Just because half the game is bad, and just over half the game is fun and enjoyable. And that's where I stand with this game. With all the side content and shit, like, not all the side content is bad, but a lot of the side content is bad and frustrating and annoying and just not good. And
that's why I don't do side content.
Again, my full review is 6 out of 10, because half the game most people aren't doing. A lot of people I'm talking to who are playing this game, a lot of people I've talked to who have played this game, have stopped doing the side content. They've stopped playing half the game.
I mean, that's a lot of games, I feel like, though. Like, a lot of people don't do the side content in games for one reason or another.
I don't think so. I think there are some games that people don't do the side content in, but then there are, like, when again, it's the whole idea of 80 hours or whatever it was. It took me 100 hours to beat this game, and the pacing was poor, and half the shit that took me that long was side content. More than half the game was side content for me. 60 hours plus. And it wasn't good. It wasn't enjoyable. It was frustrating and annoying, and a lot of people I'm talking to are agreeing with that. It's frustrating and annoying, and there's too much of it. Here's the proto-relics, Cobb. Here's the thing. You're not going to do it, so I'm going to spoil it for you. You do all the proto-relics in every region. So there's 4 quests in each region to do these proto-relics that can be varying levels of, all right, that's cool, to, all right, this is really dumb. For instance, Cosmo Canyons is really dumb. Gungaga's is all right. Stuff like that. You finish that, and you unlock the location to Gilgamesh's island. Surprise, it's Gilgamesh, if you didn't already know that.
I didn't, and that's kind of a bummer, because Gilgamesh is cool, but I don't have any desire to do the proto-relic stuff.
I knew it was Gilgamesh the second I saw him during the, what's it called stuff? Fort Condor stuff. I knew it was Gilgamesh the second I saw that.
I didn't do any of the Fort Condor stuff.
Yeah. Well, the captain that they were following, I know you did one or two of them.
I tried the first one once and then never went to it again.
Yeah. So it's Gilgamesh. First of all, you cannot do the end of it without having all the summons. Because in order to do the end of it, after you do all of the proto-relic shit, it sends you to Gilgamesh's island. Or you go to Gilgamesh's island. You have to actually get there and travel there. And then there are 4 more quest line, 4 more things to do on Gilgamesh's island. 3 of them are combats with 2 summons in each. Which is like, so, for instance, and the worst one, the one that took me the longest, Kajuda and Phoenix. So Phoenix, I don't know if you remember Phoenix's like combat feature
that fight was a pain in the ass.
Because to fight Phoenix, so Drew, since you haven't played this, to fight Phoenix in the combat VR to unlock Phoenix, you need to first defeat anything that it is linked to. You cannot damage Phoenix until you defeat what Phoenix is linked to.
Okay.
So once you defeat that, then you can hurt Phoenix. In this mode, in this thing, you have to fight two summons now. Kajuda and Phoenix at the same time. Guess who Phoenix is linked to?
Kajuda?
Yes. Kajuda. Guess what Phoenix does when you kill Kajuda?
Revives Kajuda?
Rebirth Flame. Doesn't relink itself to Kajuda, but has already done Rebirth Flame. So guess who you have to kill twice? Fucking Phoenix. Kajuda. Kajuda. You have to kill Kajuda twice. I somehow lucked out and maybe glitched the game out or something. When Phoenix did Rebirth Flame, it ended up killing whoever it was that I think it ended up killing Cloud, who had summoned Bahamut, Neo Bahamut, and he did his Giga Flare, which ended up canceling out the rebirth of the Rebirth Flame for Kajuda, and that's the only way I won this. It was bullshit, because Kajuda's combat sequence, you might have gotten Kajuda, you might have fought him, I don't remember.
No, I haven't, because I think Kajuda's probably the Gungaga summon.
Kajuda's Gungaga, yeah. So Kajuda's...
I'm still at the Gungaga reactor.
Yeah, so to fight Kajuda, because it uses the tri-element, it changes its element constantly. Or not constantly, but it'll change its element. If it changes its element three times before you can break its element, it will then use its super ability. So with Kajuda, you have to make sure that you can opposite a whatever element it chose to. So if it goes ice, it's fire, fire, ice, lightning, wind, blah, blah, blah. And you have to make sure to do that damage, and it's a DPS check on Kajuda to make sure it doesn't use its ultimate ability. It was such a pain. Then the other one, it was, Alexander and Odin, which it wasn't as bad, because after about a minute into the fight, Odin just is, on board and disappears, and then it's just fighting Alexander. But it's a flat-out DPS check to see if you can do enough damage on Alexander and kill Alexander before Odin returns.
Oh, that's fun.
And Odin's, you're going to have a hard time with Odin. His combat sequence, if you actually even try to get him, his combat, situation is you have to be dodging and damaging him enough to where he doesn't get too bored. And if he does get too bored, he will warn you that he's getting bored by doing, Gjallarhorn something or doing an ability, and then use Zantetsuken, which kills you in one hit, no matter what.
Yeah, so there's, a 50-50 chance that I do the summons or not. It depends if I feel like it at the time. Yeah. I didn't do any summons in Remake at all.
Yeah, but it's so...
I just never felt the, because, I don't use them, so, there's not a whole lot of reason to...
Yeah, I
fight them.
Well, that's the thing, that's the bullshit about modern Final Fantasies, is you can't just summon the summons. The game has to prompt you to summon the summons. And every Final Fantasy since, did 15 have this? Or 13?
15, you didn't even have a chance of summoning them? Randomly appear.
Yeah, the game would prompt it. And so I got into basic bitch-ass fights. And it would be oh, Shiva wants to show up. Or Ramu wants to show up. Well, there's nothing fucking happening. 16, you just went into Berserk mode. You didn't even summon the summons themselves. I think 13 was the last game where you actually got to summon the summon and it fought alongside you. But modern Final Fantasy games, modern Final Fantasy games, you don't get to summon the summons. So you're right. Summon stuff is kind of bullshit because you don't get to use it freely. I kind of understand it's a lot more powerful, but at the same time, the game's fucking AI doesn't do shit, and so you have to keep commanding it. So I have to use ATB to summon, and then I have to use ATB to tell the summon to do shit. It's shitty. It's a pain in the ass. And after
that's funny. The few times I have summoned, they do damage even when I'm not directing them to do damage.
They'll do some damage, but it's not noticeable. It's not until their timer runs out that they use their ultimate ability. But
yeah, that is true.
You have to use ATB. You can use ATB to command them as well.
Yeah, which I've done a couple of times, but generally the summon icon comes up and I'm well, I could use this ATB gauge to summon, or I could use it to just keep damaging, and I just keep damaging instead. Okay. Because, like, the summon, I normally don't get, like, I get a lot of summon options, like you said, during, like, shit fights. Not during, like, major boss fights where they'd be useful.
Well, it becomes more consistent with boss fight summons later on into the game. But there are also areas that you just can't summon bosses. Kate Sith gets an ability where his ability is he can summon his boss summon materia and use one attack of that summon. But it can only be used in areas that can have that summon be called. So there are some fights that you just can't even call a summon in. So you can't even use that ability from Kate Sith.
Yeah. I've also had like the luck where I'll get into a fight and I'll get like Palmer, when you fight Palmer and the big robot,
mm-hmm.
I had the option to summon, but like the three summons I had equipped were just useless against him. Like I had like the Chocobo summon, maybe Ifrit or something like that, and like one other one that just it wasn't going to do extra like particularly good damage, and it was just made more. I summoned just to get like the big shot at the end, and then ignored the summon the entire time and kept using my elemental like. Lightning attacks, because those were doing actual damage.
Like if summoning was more worthwhile, where I could use two, maybe it'd be like a summon takes three ATB gauges to summon and it does a really powerful attack or something like that, that would be great. But the way the summons are, you're right, they're kind of bullshit. And I agree, because after you defeat the six summons that you have to defeat before you go fight, before you finish it, then you have to go fight fucking Gilgamesh himself, and that fight's a bitch, because his battle mechanic is like you have to block him in order to pressure him and get him to release the weapons he's got on him, and the more weapons he has on him, obviously the more damage. At one point he summons Excalibur, which does like 5,001 damage hits in one hit. And so you'll just see one damage being just your health meter just whittling away at one point at a time until you dodge out of the way, if you can get out of the way of that or not. And then what you get from fighting him or beating him is a summon for him and transmuter items that you can only transmute from doing stuff in hard mode. That aren't even really worthwhile. One of them breaks the 9999 damage threshold. The other two are like, take less damage, deal less damage, take more damage, deal more damage.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm generally in games just for the story. Well, games like this.
Yeah,
like, I don't care about the side content. I don't care about, like, collecting everything. I just want to see where the story's going.
And look, when I play this game on hard mode, I'll finally be able to know where the story's going. Because, luckily, the game saves your progress totally from... So, everything's already done for me if I were to go play it in hard mode. So
why would you even play it in hard mode, though?
Because the gameplay itself is enjoyable, and I kind of want to try to experience the story, and I do plan on replaying Remake, and so I'm going to want to replay both of them, but since I already have everything, all of my gripes about this game are done, so that I can just go play the game and just streamline through it, or just do, like, the Battle Arena shit or whatever when it gets to that point. Like I said, I think the hard mode combat system is the better combat system in the game. It makes you strategize more, it makes you think more about what you do. You can't use items. Your resting at benches only restores your health. It doesn't restore your MP. So, like, magic is a lot more valuable. And so, like, to maybe actually really know what happened in this fucking game, I'll play it on hard mode. But
no items thing is what keeps me from even bothering with hard mode in that game, other than the fact that you have to beat it to unlock it.
Yeah. Like, look, I
don't want to replay a game.
Yeah, I don't often either, says the guy who's in the middle of replaying two games. But I liked Remake, and I've been wanting to replay through the hard mode. I never actually finished the hard mode. I like the hard mode combat system. I like how that works. I like how it feels a little bit more strategic. Yeah, am I going to get Re3 when that comes out day one? Probably. Am I going to complain the same? Am I going to do everything in Re3? Yes. Am I going to complain just the same because there's all this in there? Yes. Am I going to give it a low score because there's too much in it, like this one was? If it's the same way, probably.
Why don't you just change the way you play and don't do everything?
I'm still going to give the game a half score because I've only played half the game.
You and your metrics.
You are not playing half the game. So that's how are you going to give the game higher than half a score?
Because that's not how scoring works.
That's just not how scoring works. No, it's not.
Yes, it is. You're playing half the game. You're not playing the entire game. You're playing half the game. So the half the game you're not playing because you don't like it because it is bad, because it is unplayable and unenjoyable.
Okay. So all games that have multiplayer should only ever receive a 5 out of 10.
No. Why?
Like for Cobb, if he never wants to play, Call of Duty 4 multiplayer, as amazing as the storyline was and the gameplay was for the single player, it's at best a 5 out of 10 because, actually, maybe not even a 5 out of 10, because the multiplayer is arguably infinitely more than there is in the single player. So, by your metric, games with multiplayer at best are a 5 out of 10 if you don't like online multiplayer.
I mean, why are you going to get a game that's strong online multiplayer specific game and you're not going to play the online multiplayer part?
Because it has a 4-hour story that's impeccable, but it also has online multiplayer. Like,
I have actually picked up Call of Duty just for the story mode before. And then,
or Halo, or it. Fucking like any fucking first person.
Halo pre-343 had solid story, like,
I'm not saying
campaigns.
I'm saying it very much did, but I'm also saying a lot of Halo is online multiplayer.
But you're also, the game I'm talking about is a single player game. The game you're talking about is a game for both single and multiplayer. There are two different kinds of games.
Saying that he's missing out on content that he doesn't like, so it's a 5 out of 10 at best. Like, that's your argument, is that if there's content in the game that I don't like, it just limits the maximum ability of a score of a game.
If there's content in the game that is bad, optional or not, if it's bad content, it makes the game bad.
But, like, and yes, like, you're not wrong. Like, it does hurt a game. My only disagreement is in it's like basing it half, like giving it a half score because you only liked half the game.
Like, I only liked half the game. But the other half the game is bad.
Hear me out. Like, if I just don't play that, though, it's not bad to me. I didn't play it because it just wasn't what I wanted, which is similar to multiplayer. Like, regardless of how good multiplayer is in a game, I'm never touching it because it's fucking boring. I don't like it. So, like, I understand what Drew means. It is a little bit different because this is also your metric, not mine. But, like, I'm fine with playing half a game and still giving it a reasonable score based on what I played of it.
But you didn't play it all.
And that's fine.
There's that asterisk. You didn't play it all. What you played of this game gets a 9 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10 or whatever. But what you didn't play contributes to more than or roughly half the available playtime in a single playthrough. So half the available playtime of a game that you did not play, you cannot score. So half of your score, your score is only for half of a game.
I mean, scores also are stupid and don't really matter. Like, it's,
well, I mean, game reviews are stupid and don't really matter. There's no point to this podcast if things are stupid and don't really matter.
No. I'm saying putting a numeric score on something is stupid because everybody has a different opinion. Your opinion on it is almost always going to be different than mine. Like, what it comes down to is, like, did you enjoy enough of the game that you would recommend somebody play it if they enjoyed Remake?
I would tell them that the side content is bullshit. The rest of the game, as far as I can think, was enjoyable enough to play, and I'm willing to replay through that shit. I don't want to do the side shit anymore. I'm willing to replay through the story.
Game itself is good enough to play.
A 6 out of 10. A 6 is average, or is a little more than average. Is a little more than half. It's good enough to play.
But again, doesn't it seem better to just...
A 6 is an F in United States.
Yeah, just in America, where everything is stupid. But also, like...
60% is like a D and E? No, a C. is average. Its average score is a 6.
Realistically, out of a 100-point scale, a 50 should actually be, like, middle of the road, but because of the way that America views everything, a 5 or 6 is bad, because we were taught that anything below, like, 70% is essentially a failing grade. Which, again, it's not. Like,
if you're
60 points below that, that make it worse. But that's what I'm saying. Like, not doing a numeric scale is just easier. Like, just simply saying, like, yes, it's worth playing. No, it's not worth playing.
At what point in your gas tank do you start to worry about when you need to get gas? What percentage of your gas tank filled do you start to worry about?
Goes on.
And what's that percentage? 10, 12%?
I have no fucking clue.
I start to worry about my gas at about a quarter tank left, which is probably before the light goes on. Just in the terms of Drew saying that a 50 is a fail, 50% I don't worry about it. 50% is average. 50% is middle of the line. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just, it's there. It's fine. It's not a game. Like, it's not a shit game. It's not a shit thing. A 5 out of 10 is not shit. It is the thing. I would put Dr. Strangelove at a 5 out of 10.
Like, being even about it, like, you're not wrong. Like, you saying it's a 5 out of 10 because it is 100% middle of the road. Yes. I was just simply saying, when you say that to somebody, especially an American, that's a bad score because that's just, like, regardless of what the points mean, like, that's just how they're viewed, unfortunately.
I'm not going to skew my points so that Americans understand. I'm not going to say this game is a 7.5 out of 10 just to say that half the game is not good. I'm going to let you know that half the game is not good by telling you that some of the side content is enjoyable, and I liked it, but everything else wasn't and was unrewarding and unnecessary. So half that game, that 4 points, are taken away because of that. Maybe there's other things that take those four points away.
But that's where I think the point scale is broken, because
that's unfortunate. I hate the number scale too. I hate it too. But to give people a basic idea of what I think about the game, it's a 6 out of 10.
But that's what I'm arguing against. It, like, not that you're giving it a 6 out of 10. That a 6 out of 10 just isn't a good way of describing anything.
No, it's like, that's, reviews are stupid.
Because, like, realistically, like, the parts that you enjoyed are probably more, what, like, 8 out of 10? Like, if you were to just score, like, the stuff that you enjoyed out of the game, what do you think you would give?
I would probably put it at about 8, 8.5.
And then,
if we stuck with just the story and the gameplay and the graphics and everything else, and none of the extra shit in the game, I would give it probably 8, 8.5, something like that, in that region. Still confusing as fuck, though.
And what would you give, like, just the side content? Completely divorced from everything.
Probably, like, a 2 or 3, if at best.
So, like, if I was any good at math, that is actually probably less than a 6, if you were to, like, separate them out.
8.5, half of 8.5 is 4.75. Let's give it a 2. That's a 1. So that's 5.75. Round it up to 6.
Okay, that's fair. But, like, for me, because I personally don't give a fuck about any of the side content, whether I'm not playing half the game or not, like, I would recommend the game just based on what I have played, because it's fun. Like, I'm having a good time with it. I just haven't had time to play it.
No, there's parts of the game I enjoyed. But unfortunately, the parts that I did not enjoy overshadowed the parts I did enjoy.
Yeah, which is why I very much am on the side of, don't do everything if you're not having fun with it. And I realize, like, it is just ingrained in you to do everything. Like, you can't not do everything.
Unless you're having such
a bad fucking time. Like, you're more likely to just stop playing the game entirely than to skip something in the game.
No, yeah.
I'm just like, ah, fuck it. Like, this, I don't have to do this to finish the game. I'm just gonna skip it, and if I feel like doing it later, I'll come back to it.
Yeah, I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one who feels this way about this game.
No, I've seen plenty of people that, like, didn't enjoy the side content and, like, tended to skip it, and then really enjoyed the game itself because they weren't suffering through all of the really bad, like, minigames.
When I go back and play through hard mode, and all's I'll have is, at best, one side quest that I never finished in normal mode, because, first of all, it's broken right now, and you can't finish it. At least unless they already patched that, I don't remember. But second of all, it requires me to play stupid bullshit Gold Saucer games that I hate. The fucking 3D Brawler game sucks. That and
all of the Gold Saucer games sucked.
Even the motorcycle one was shockingly bad, which it was really good. The motorcycle shit in Remake was really good, but the motorcycle game in the Gold Saucer fucking sucked.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy any of the Gold Saucer minigames.
Yeah. I thought the speed was fine. I loved Chocobo Racing. I loved the Chocobo Racing. I thought the Chocobo Racing was fantastic.
It was mediocre Mario Kart.
I mean, yeah, probably.
But see, I mean, like, that's where we differ. Like, there were some side games that I probably enjoyed, or that will come up that I will enjoy, that you didn't also. But, like, there's also a higher than probably 60% chance that, like, I just won't do any more side content, because it's been long enough. I just want to see how the game finishes. Like, I just want to experience the story at this point.
Yeah.
If I had been playing it consistently the last, like, 3 weeks, I probably would have done a ton more side content. But now it's like, all right, it's been so long since I've played this game. I don't want to do bullshit. I just want to see where the story's going. I want to find out, like, what is different, what some of the weird stuff going on is, like, how they're going to wrap this game up to lead into the third part. Like, I don't give a fuck about Queen's Gambit or Chocobo Racing or any of that stuff. And I never really did. It was just, I was willing to do it because I was playing more consistently. But when I finish it, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 just to be different than you.
I mean, yeah, you can give it a 9 out of 10 just to spite me or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Give it an 11 out of 10 just to make sure that we have a 5-point gap.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you don't like half the game, then you're not going. If you think half the game was bad, you're going to score half the game bad.
So, and you're not wrong. If you did all of that and think it's bad, that is reasonable. But the way that you did say it was, if you don't play half the game, you have to rate it half what you scored it. That, like, those were the words you said to me.
I'm agreeing, Drew. I stand by that. If you don't play half the game, then there is a whole half the game that you have not experienced and therefore cannot give a true review to.
So I disagree with that, only because, as long as you are honest about not doing this stuff. Like, if we're talking about, like, a review on, like an IGN or GameSpot, and they give something a 9 out of 10, they're like, so we only played 20 hours of this 80-hour game, and we're giving it a 9 out of 10. I'm like,
you can't give it a 9 out of 10 because you did not.
Yeah. But if I play 70 hours of Rebirth and skip the majority of the non-required Psy content, like, I have gotten enough experience of that game to be able to say the side stuff wasn't as good as it could have been. It was a little too bloated, but the main story and combat were a lot of fun.
But the content that was bloated and not enjoyable accounts for half the content of the game.
Which is fine. I'm not disagreeing with that part of it. I'm just disagreeing, like, if you play enough of a game to make an informed decision.
So, like, so half the game is bad or unenjoyable. Giving this game, I'll even give you a 7.5. Giving this game anything higher than a 7.5 is false.
I mean, if you can play the game, beat the game without whatever content you play the game and beat
why
the game.
Why is
with,
it in the game?
Listen. You can give it whatever the fuck score you want. Why is it in the game? Fair question. Also a fair question. But only a game only needs to be judged on what it takes to beat the game.
No. No. Yes.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Then why are we going to have a whole nother game of this game when they could have done this in 40 hours?
That is an absolutely fair question. It's a totally fair question. That doesn't mean the content that literally does not need to be done to finish the game.
But that's part 100%. Of the game.
Everyone could beat the game without ever experiencing it.
So then how can you truly review a game if you've never experienced it?
Because a game is the beginning to end storyline.
No, a game of this is a sum of all of its parts. A game is not just the story. Do you play Apex for the story?
No, because it's not a fucking story game.
You were, hold on. You were saying that Cobb would have to give, because based on my metrics, Cobb would have to give a Call of Duty a bad score because he doesn't play multiplayer.
Right.
Because a game is just based on storyline to you, then that game would be just half that game. Is to you, he can score that game a 10 out of 10. But if there's no story on a game, whether a game is story or not, if there's no story on a game, then that game is a zero because it is based on the story.
It's almost like reviews are subjective to the person making them.
But like in a game, in a storyline game, a single player storyline game, like Apex Legends is a fucking multiplayer only game. Like, what the fuck else are you going to review it on?
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is not just the story. There's so much more to the game. A game is
But there's literally almost every game ever that has side shit you could never do, have never engaged with, and what are you supposed to just literally have to do every single thing in every single game to give a 100% valid argument on what the game is?
In a sense of games, media, and review, yes. You need to experience the game in and of itself, in its full. Why do you think I started Back Forever Go when we were written content only? I did the first looks. Because this was, hey, I played 3 hours. Here, let me tell you what I think about it. Wait until I beat the game and experience everything, and I'll let you know everything in full. That's why I started a first look is, here is 10 hours into this 100-hour game. Here's what I think about it. I'll let you know how the game is when I finish it, when I experience the game in and of itself in its entirety. I am going to talk poorly about this game because of the bloated nature of the side content that, yes, may not be necessary to do, but is still in the game and is unnecessary to be in that game whatsoever because it is bloated and not needing to be there. Because if you're not going to do it, you don't need it. It negatively impacts my experience because it is not very redeemable to do some of this stuff. It's not very worthwhile to do some of this stuff. Some of it was worthwhile. Some of it was fun. A lot of it wasn't. So I am going to review this poorly, and I think if you're going to sit here and tell me that a game review is just about a story, and then you're going to turn around when I say stuff like I'm saying about half the game is bullshit and bad, and so I'm giving it half a score or half the score or whatever, but then you call me out on games like Monster Hunter, where Monster Hunter is more than just the story, but the story in Monster Hunter is exact fucking bullshit. I don't pay attention to Monster Hunter's story. I don't, because it's not about the story. Now, a game is a sum of its parts. Absolutely, I agree with that. So the Monster Hunter game would lose points for the story just being stupid and dull and uninspired in pretty much every Monster Hunter game. But the game in and of itself is good and enjoyable, and all of the content in the game is good. So I would put Monster Hunter, a non-story-based game, somewhere between a 7 and 8.5. Because the story sucks, but everything else makes up for that story. If you can give me a game where the story makes up for the bad shit, then absolutely give it higher scores. But this story is holy fucking Kingdom Hearts, Batman. That's all I got to say about it. It does not make up this stuff. It doesn't.
So, Drew, I do disagree. Just because a game has a narrative doesn't mean that you should only base it on the narrative.
I'm not saying you base it on the narrative. I'm saying you can validly review a game based on the content that you played that got you to the end of the narrative.
Within reason, I think there is like a line that you have to walk there if you are doing it for a professional like review. Like if you're just like talking about it with people and you're like, I don't know, that it's like a 6 out of 10. That's different. But if you're trying to present like a professional formatted review of it, I think you do need to have at least a certain amount of the total content at least attempted, just to be able to just so you can say like the story and like what you have to play from beginning to end to complete the game is great, but there's 20 hours of side content that's not. Like, you don't necessarily have to drop it 4 points if you don't like it. Like, that stuff impacted Richie super negatively. But, like, for me, because I'm fine skipping it, it's not having a negative impact on me. So it's not going to have that big of a negative impact on, like, what I would rate the game. But it would still be, like, yeah, like the game was a lot of fun, but like it's bloated as shit because they have an extra 20 plus hours of side content that's unnecessary.
Sure.
And you do have to kind of get some of that in just to be able to be like, yeah, like all of this stuff is unnecessary. It's not done well. Most of it's not fun. Like the game itself, like the main line of the game, great. The side content, they fucked.
Like, look, I have played a lot of RPGs over the past year. What was it fucking called? Tales of Arise. I did not do half the side content. I thought the game was really fun. I thought it was really good. I thought it was incredibly long. It had too many endings. And I...
Wasn't it really grind heavy too? Like, didn't you have to grind a whole bunch for something in that game?
Fucking $60 in DLC just for experience and money. It has its
right,
flaws.
The money's impossible in that game. That's
yeah,
what
money
it
is impossible in that game. It has its flaws. I didn't do the side content. My honest review is, yeah, if you streamline the game, probably going to give it like a 5 at best. But I didn't do everything else that's in the game, so I can't really give you a full review. I can't tell you what the full game was because I did not do everything in the game because I was done with the game once I finished the story. Because all of the stuff, and here's the other part. This game does not have a New Game Plus mode. This game did get a DLC, but all of the content only unlocks after you beat the game when you flash back to before you go to the end of the game.
Oh,
to me,
weird.
Fuck that. A lot of JRPGs do that nowadays, where it'll flash back, even Tears of the Kingdom, but the first one.
Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild did the same thing. After you beat Ganon, it flashbacks you to before you go fight Ganon so that you can go do the other stuff. You're not just running around
in
Hyrule.
That's true.
Like, a lot of JRPGs and Japanese games do that nowadays, where it'll cut you back to before you fought the boss, after you defeat the boss, so you can do all of the side content that gets unlocked afterwards. I think that's bullshit. That is bullshit design. If I can't do that in my first playthrough, or if there's not a New Game Plus to have me do that, then that is bad design, because I have no reason to go do that, because the rewards aren't going to help me beat the game better, easier, or give me a different end game storyline.
Of that doesn't bother me as much, just because like there are certain, like in Breath of the Wild, for instance, like there are certain just like stupid shit to go do in that game that I just wanted to beat Ganon at one point. Like, I'm just like, well, I'm just going to go fight Ganon. Like, I can do it. Yeah. Let me go do it. But I wasn't necessarily done with the game. So, like, I'm glad that game just lets me kind of pick up from, like, the save before that or whatever and go, like, do more shrines, even though, like, I've already technically completed the game.
Yeah,
but, like, some games I could see that being more frustrating in, especially, like, a game where, like Tales of Arise, where what's the point of doing some of that side content if it's not leading to the final boss?
Exactly.
So, like, I think that one kind of, it depends how it's done and how it's handled.
Yeah, and, I don't know. We've talked a lot about Final Fantasy VII. If, please, let's keep talking if we still have more to talk about. I don't want to just cut the conversation over.
I've got a question for you. And, like, sure. Like, what percent, like, if you had to guess right now, because I know you don't really follow this stuff, what percentage do you think of, like, people in games media, like your GameSpots, your IGNs, your Kotakus, that do reviews, actually 100% games that they review?
I think next to maybe 50% or less.
Okay, that's probably pretty close.
That's why I don't go by reviews. I don't follow reviews, because I know they don't fully play the game 100%. I know a lot of them might not necessarily even beat the game before they put out a review to it.
So the only if they don't beat the game, they usually have a note at the beginning or end of the article stating how much of the game they played and why they didn't complete it.
Yeah.
So they're at least upfront about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine the vast majority of reviews are on games that are beaten. I'd imagine almost 0% of reviewers are reviewing literally every single bit of content that is in game.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to do on like the timelines they're given too.
Exactly.
It is few and far between that they're given a game with enough like advance notice that they could even attempt to 100% it, especially with how like archaic and obscure certain games get with some of their content. Like, it's going to take them a week just to figure out how to do something, and their review was due the week before.
Mm-hmm.
But like that is why, like, I personally don't look at the scores. Like, if I'm curious how a game like did, I'll read the actual review, or like bare minimum, I'll read like the bullet points that a lot of them put at the bottom, regardless of what score they gave it. Because I'm like,
I honestly don't look at professional reviewers at all. I look at general overall player
reviews. See, I'm the opposite. I don't think player reviews mean fucking anything.
See, here's the thing. I only play games that I know I'm probably going to like, and I know the people who play the games that I know I'm going to like are also only playing those games that they know they're going to.
So are you talking about like Steam reviews, or are you talking about like people that you follow on like YouTube and like Twitch and stuff like that?
Steam, like I will go through and see how it's reviewing on Steam. Okay. Like if it's recent review, like generally I'll go with all-time reviews, but sometimes I'll take the recent reviews. But I'm looking at Pacific Drive right now. Game came out on February 22nd, 2024. 7,000 it's reviewing generally very positive. All right, great. That's going to be a game that it's going to be within my liking. It's going to be a game that I'm going to enjoy. Nightingale is getting mediocre reviews. That's when I start to look into it and be like, well, why is it getting mediocre reviews? What's wrong with it? And there are issues with that game. The fact that even if you're playing single player, you're always online and connected to a server, even if you're playing single player. And that will make your game lag, and it will crash your game because you're connected to the servers. And the servers are bad, and the game in general is just poor progression and things like that. Like, all right, well, that sucks. I'll also watch YouTubers in general, like people I am fans of, play the games and see how, not necessarily how they play the game, but watch how the game is played. And be like, okay, I can get behind this. I like this. I'll get into it.
Yeah, and that those are both totally valid ways of doing it. I'm actually more likely, if I'm looking at a game, like, if I see a game that I think Erica will like, I'm more likely to check the Steam reviews to see if they're positive or not. Like, with just that, like you just pointed out, like the positive, overwhelmingly positive. Mm-hmm. But, like, if it's something, because then I can be like, hey, you might like this game, and, like, send her a link to it, and she can do, like, due diligence to see if she thinks she'll like it. But for me, like, because people can be so, like, vitriolic on the internet, I tend to not trust user reviews as much. Because some people will just go in there and give an item 5 stars, and then you read their actual review, and they're shitting all over it, or vice versa. Not for a game, but I just saw something the other day, and I wish I could remember what it was, that they gave it 2 stars, and then the first line of their fucking review is, this item is amazing. I'm like, this score and these words don't fucking line up.
that's the bullshit of the American scoring system, where nothing deserves a perfect. Like, that's something, that's things people deal with. I deal with that in my workplace. Perfect means you went above and well above and beyond. Like, a 5 out of 5 means you did the best out of the best, and then you went well beyond that. Not, you did exactly what you were expected of, and then at the best you could do. That is a 3. Is you did exactly what's expected of you the best you could, is a 3. No, I did what was expected of me as best I could. That should at least be a 4.5, if not 5. Not 5 should not be, like, that's why,
well, Uber, maybe your workplace shouldn't be rating you, too. Like, that's, I mean, its own bag
it's,
of issues.
It's employee reviews. That happens every year. Every company does employee reviews. Like, every company I've ever been to had a number-based review system. And every company I've worked with has said that no one gets a 5 out of 5 in any category, because that is, like, deserving of a promotion. You should not be in this department level. Like, you are, you should be the boss. That's how they're told.
I've actually never been told that before.
That's why, like Uber and Uber Eats and shit like that, that's bullshit, because if you give them less than a 5, they are losing fares. They are losing pickups.
Oh,
if you give them
like,
less
to be than- fair, like, I rated somebody a 1 star yesterday from DoorDash, because they literally left our food on the fucking curb.
Yeah,
that's a 1, yeah.
Absolutely deserves a 1. But if they did everything right, in my opinion, if they did everything right and were where they came up to you and gave you your order based on a lot of people's ideas, that would be a 3. Whereas if you give somebody less than
corporate ideas,
that's based on corporate ideals, yes. And if you give anyone less than a 5 in those systems, they're going to start losing money.
Well, that's why
all those shit, it's either perfect or the 0 for me. Yeah. Like, either, yep, you got me where I wanted to go, you brought me my food on time, perfect score. Or you drove like a fucking maniac and I thought I was going to die. Or, yeah, you put my food at the wrong fucking house or left it on the curb, zero. Get fucked. Like, get better at your job.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I could remember what podcast it was. But one of the podcasts, they were talking about buying a car. And I can't remember which one it was. But like basically, they got a car. They noticed like an issue with the car, like the model they were getting. I think it was like a chip in the windshield or something like that the okay. dealership took care of. But like when it came time for that like survey thing, like they answered the survey honestly. And one of the questions was like, what was the condition of the car? And they gave it like a 4. And then in a little like explanation box explained why they gave it a 4 and that and like the next question was this resolved? And they gave it 5 again. And then like for the next week, the person was getting calls from like the salesman at the dealership asking like basically like asking them to explain why they didn't give a perfect score and how much it impacted their business.
I agree with the fact that the car wasn't in perfect condition. Whether they fixed it or not, the car wasn't in perfect condition when they got that, so it was a 4.
Exactly.
But then they fixed it, so it was a 5. 100% agree. Yeah. Is it that dealership's fault that there was a chip in the windshield? Probably not. Somebody probably sold it to them like that. Or some freak accident happened. It shouldn't affect their business that much. Based on one single car sale being a 4 that they fixed. Like,
to be clear, it did not impact the dealership business. It impacted that salesman because technically their sale didn't get all 5s on the survey.
And that's bullshit. That's absolute fucking bullshit.
That's like any other time you get like those surveys and it's like, please give all 5s. Because a lot of places, it's either 5 or they failed. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's a 1 through 4 scale, but if you give them anything less than a 5 in any category, they fail. Like they get some sort of points deducted from whatever pool, whether it's a per user, a per store, like they fail based on 1 4 out of 5. And, like, all that stuff is stupid, much like all other rating systems. Like, yeah. Just use your words. Did you enjoy it? Why did you? Why didn't you?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but... current state of media and attention spans and everything else, words don't work. Numbers, immediate reviews work. Like, numbers work, or very positive media, words.
That stuff on Steam works. Like just being able to see overwhelmingly positive, it's like, this is worth at least looking into.
Well, and that's the unfortunate thing, is like, that shit works more than writing a review. People aren't going to read reviews. People aren't going to do anything about reviews. I talk about these games because this is what I do. This is what I love. This is what I enjoy. I spent 140 hours playing Baldur's Gate, 102 hours playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, 50 hours playing Final Fantasy XVI. I don't know. I put a lot of time, and there's an example of a game, Final Fantasy 16. I did all of the storyline, I did all of the side quests, I attempted all of the side content, or some of the side content, two of the 5 side content things that I could find. And there's no good reward for them. So that does lower its score, because those side contents, the 2 that I attempted, or 1 or 2 that I may have only tried 1, but they're all the same. They're battle arenas using just that summon's abilities. Their rewards are that summon's ability, that you get a an accessory that makes that summon's ability stronger. That's it. It wasn't worth it, and it wasn't good. It was all right, but it wasn't great. But it's kind of, because it's unrewarding, because it's sort of bloated content, and it doesn't give a good, appropriate, proper reward or worthwhile reward, that does lower its score, unfortunately. I enjoyed Final Fantasy 16. I had fun. It's a bad Final Fantasy game, but it's a good game. It's an enjoyable game. The story is not as convoluted as some people make it out to be, and I am looking forward to the DLC. I'm not going to get it right away, but I am looking forward to it. But
I am shocked. Metascore for Final Fantasy 16 is actually an 87.
That sounds about right. I'd probably put it down. Honestly, I've been sticking to this number a lot. Probably 7.5. Like, a 75%, whatever. Like, for the most, it was good. It was an enjoyable game. It was fun. It was entertaining. And look, at the end of it all, I had fun playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, for the most part. 60% of the time, I enjoyed myself. The other 40% of the time, I did not.
Yeah, like, the eight hours of it I played, I think I enjoyed an hour of it. Like, I thought that game was just straight garbage.
Yeah, you're 16. Yeah, it's two different kinds of games. Like I said, it's a bad Final Fantasy. It does not deserve to be a numbered Final Fantasy game.
I mean, I don't think it was a good game at all. Like, I thought I didn't enjoy the combat. I didn't enjoy the characters. The story from what I played, the story was basically non-existent.
It's unfortunate. It takes a while for the story to really get into play. It also thanks George R. R. Martin for doing that. It's art. It's all subjective, absolutely. But I don't need bloated games anymore. I don't.
I mean, that's where gaming has gone, though.
Yeah.
Every game has to be 100 hours, otherwise people bitch that games are $70 and don't have enough content. Because we all know publishers are not going to lower the prices. So the studios have to cram a bunch of not fully formed content in to try and make the hour count of the game worth the $70 or $120 price tag when it's like a special edition with a digital fucking art book.
Yeah,
because digital content adds $40 to the cost of the game.
Right. So I'm going to end with this. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was 2 discs.
Yeah, it was.
It didn't need 2 discs.
No, probably not. Other than the fact that like the game was very pretty. So yeah. I could see the game needing 2 discs just because of the amount of high res like images and stuff it needed. But like
4K video is very big.
Yeah. If it was like traditional 2 discs, where it was like 1 disc was like the first part of the game, the second disc was like the second part of the game, I'm like, why? Like, you did this because you artificially inflated it.
But how much of the second disc was, what's the word? Art
there was and no, models. There was no content. No, there's no content on disc 2. The way modern games work when it's multi-disc, disc 1 installs the game, disc 2 is basically the key to unlock it to play it. It's actually stupid. There's a little bit of content on the second disc, but for the most part, you put disc 1 in, that installs the like 150 gigs onto your system that you could just as easily download, but why download it if you have it on disc, right? And then the second disc is just used as like your like decryption key, basically. To say that, like, you actually own the physical copy of this game and can play it. Because if you didn't need a disc in there and the whole game was just installed, what's stopping you from trading the game in and then just leaving it installed?
Yeah.
It's dumber than you thought.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know how big the capacity on the PlayStation discs are, but yeah, it is a 150 gig game.
Yeah. And that's why. Yeah, that's why I said, like, the majority... So, if you look at the discs, Red Dead Redemption 2 was the same way. One disc is called, like, the data disc, and the other one is called, like, the play disc. Because you can't just put one in and play off of it. You actually have to put the one in to install the data and then switch discs. Which, again, like, real stupid. Like, I get it. Like, you have to have a way for people to be able to play the game that can't download content. Like, I get that. But, like...
According to the wiki on PS5, a PS5 game disc can hold up to 100 gigs of data.
Okay. So I thought they were bigger now.
So there's 50 gigs of data. In contrast to PS4 games, which usually come dual layers, standard Blu-ray disc capable of holding up to 50 gigs. So it's double the PS4, but if it's a 150 gig game, there's 50 gigs on the other disc. Yeah. According to the wiki, I don't really know, and this is just from the little excerpt that Google gives from when I searched how much data is saved on a PS5 disc. So there is 50 gigs of data saved on to that disc. How much of that data was the side shit?
Yeah, there's no real way to know. All I do know is in Japan, they've labeled the discs incorrectly, and people were trying to install the game, nothing was installing, and then they had to, like, figure out that you had to switch the discs because the play disc was the install disc.
Oof.
Yeah. 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 They fucked up a little bit. But I think that'll probably be a show for this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in 2 weeks, we're going to watch Romeo and Juliet, which should be a fucking experience. Drew, I assume you've never seen that, right?
Fuck no.
Okay. It's not, when I saw it like forever ago, it wasn't bad. It might be fucking terrible now. Who knows? But like Rich said before, it's John Leguizamo running around fucking acting out Shakespeare with like a fucking Uzi or something. It's stupid. Yeah.
It's modern day iambic pentameter, man. Like, come on now.
Sounds fucking terrible. Like,
no, it's good. It's good in a real dumb way. But yeah, so 2 weeks we'll be watching that. Other than that, if you would like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with your dollars, though, you can go to your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All of it helps. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us an email to social@one-quest.com. And Rich, what is your streaming?
Twitch.tv/B_one. It's where I'm video game streaming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. If I'm not fighting to spread democracy in Helldivers 2, I'm fighting to save the new world in Monster Hunter World, or just sailing on the Sea of Thieves. That's most of the games I'll be playing. Maybe fitting in their Mega Man ZX series from time to time as well. So I'm in my different game every day era right now because I need a break from everything else. So just come find my schedules and come hang out when you can.
That is valid.
Yeah.
And with that, we will be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Yes. Bye.